Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, DJ Foster. I am joined again tonight by Jordan Heimer. Jordan, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. I had a lot of trick-or-treaters, and I didn't really see that coming. That's always kind of a panic moment.
I had trick-or-treaters, but I knew I was going to be at the game, so I left a plastic pumpkin full of 100 grand. Bars in front of my house. I hope the kids enjoyed.
100 grand bars? I didn't even know they sell those anymore.
Oh, come on. It's the bet. If those kids are anything like I was, like, I just made their night. Although I assume, like, the first kid ripped off the whole pumpkin.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. Were they, like, fresh out of whatchamacallits and, like, caramellos at the store, or what?
Yeah, I asked about their Necco wafer selection, but they had no Necco wafers. So I went with the 100 grand.
Should we rank Halloween candy? I blew up J.A. Adonde on Twitter for saying that York peppermint patties are an underrated Halloween candy. That's a terrible call. That's a bad take.
Terrible call.
Bad take.
Terrible call. That's like saying that an underrated Halloween candy are the like the circus peanuts. Yeah, that's a terrible call. The only thing worse is getting either, like I said, the aforementioned Necco wafers or the chewy orange circus peanuts.
Yeah, those aren't great. It's not really a candy, right? It's just like a mint. And if you give a kid that, you're like guaranteeing yourself to get toilet papered at some point in the next few weeks.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like that's worse than just leaving your, you know, turning off the porch light and just not doing trick or treating at all, giving the York peppermint patty.
We had one lady in my neighborhood growing up who would give out boxes of raisins.
No.
That was low.
No.
That's... No, and she was, I think, well-meaning. I think she was kind of a little bit granola. She's very into health. I'm sure she thought she was doing something positive for all of us, but we hated her.
Yeah. No, that's not the time to try and make a positive impact on a kid's life. You know, just give him some damn candy.
Yeah,
right. Oh, that's funny. All right, so Halloween, Clippers played the Suns. I was looking at tickets for this game, and I was shocked at how cheap they were, and I totally spaced that it was on Halloween, and that makes sense. And that actually came into play later in the game, no one being there, because if you were watching the broadcast, you could hear the last 4 or 5 minutes of some fan, I'm hoping... drunkenly heckling Dragon Bender to shoot every time the Suns had the ball.
Oh yeah, that guy was like right behind me, like a section up in the load seat, exactly at my angle to the basket.
That was an interesting experience. Did the crowd really thin out towards the end there? Because that first half, I think I would have left after the first half.
It was some ugly basketball. Just before we leave that heckler, he also at one point yelled, "You'll never be Porzingis," which I thought was hilarious. At Dragon Bender.
Yeah, do you think he's really steaming over that when he gets home? Oh, man. I had all my plans were to be Porzingis, and now...
Yeah, hopes that. look, it was an extremely ugly basketball game. It was one of those games that you just hoped the Clippers were taking just seriously enough that they weren't going to like accidentally end up in a tight game in the fourth where anything
right,
could happen.
Right.
You didn't really get the feeling that either team, frankly, ever found fourth or fifth gear tonight. It was a lot of, like, messing with the clutch and screwing up the transmission and just hoping you kind of got the car to the garage in one piece.
Yeah, that sounds like every experience I had driving as, like, a 16, 17-year-old.
Do you drive stick?
Like, no, just I just didn't know how, like, cars worked, and I wasn't driving a car that worked. And so,
oh, yeah, that's critical. That's, like, the most important thing about the car is it working.
That is a critical part of a car. The Suns and Clippers combined for more turnovers than assists in the first half, to give you an idea of how sloppy this game was, if you missed it. The Clippers pulled out the win 116-98. Like Jordan said, it was one of those games where you just kind of hoped everyone stayed healthy and the Suns didn't threaten to make it serious at any point. And they didn't. They sped the game up a lot. I thought the pace was crazy, and the passing from both teams was erratic and confusing. What positives can we take away from this game for the Clippers? Are there any, or is it just like, let's move on to the next, take the win and move on?
I think there are a couple positives, and it's probably the best the backcourt guys have looked. I mean, Chris had some nice stretches in the Portland game, but in terms of just shot making, this was the best game of the year so far for both JJ and Chris. And not that that was some huge concern. I think we all feel that these are great shooters and their shots are going to come around. But it's good to see JJ hit a couple shots in rhythm and kind of look like the JJ Redick in the first quarter that we got used to seeing last year.
Yep, agreed. I think what I saw, Wesley Johnson had a sneaky good night. He was, like, kind of out of place with his defensive energy compared to everyone else, and he had a little corner three. I just thought he played pretty well in his bench minutes. And Blake Griffin, 21 points on 7 shots. You don't see that every day.
Yep, Blake looks good. And as you mentioned yesterday on the podcast, he's bringing a lot of energy to the defensive end, and it's kind of like every possession, and you don't see him kind of loping back down on transition the way you sometimes see him take a possession off now and then in the last few years. And really good positional defense. You know, he was matched up tonight against mostly perimeter guys, and having to trail Dudley around or follow Marquise Chris around, he did a nice job, I thought, you know, in terms of focus in a game where it would have been easy to lose focus.
Yep, agreed. I think one theme we can kind of pick up on early in the season is that the Clippers are really punishing small ball quite a bit when they're playing these power forwards that aren't actually power forwards. Blake is going right to the rim, drawing fouls, and DeAndre is doing a great job drawing fouls and getting centers in foul trouble. Tyson Chandler fouled out in 18 minutes. Jared Dudley had 5 fouls really early. Marquise Chris had 3 fouls in the first half. I mean, Alex Len ended up with 5. I mean, every big man that played substantial minutes for the Suns was basically in foul trouble. And it's all Blake and DeAndre really doing the heavy lifting in that regard. So I think that's a good sign with so many teams going small in the league. The fact that the Clippers are showing that they can punish those teams early on is a great sign for their regular season hopes in my mind. What do you think?
Well, look, it's probably too early and too insane to even mention this, but what is every Clippers fan number one dream? It's that the Clippers have the front court that can kind of lock the key to beating the death lineup of the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
Now, am I going to say that something we just saw tonight against the Phoenix Suns means that they can in fact do that? No, of course not. But this is the way that DJ and Blake will have to play if the Clippers have any chance against the Warriors. Because, of course, the dream is, like, losing Bogut hurts. And DeAndre Jordan beating up on some combination of JaVale McGee and Zaza Pachulia and Blake overpowering KD or even Draymond Green, that's the dream. And if you kind of don't believe that that's possible, then you don't really believe it's possible the Clippers have a chance in a 7-game series with the Warriors.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think, like you said, that is kind of the key. If they can do that, then all of a sudden it's a really interesting series. But if they can't punish the David Wests and the Zaza Pachulias of the world, then you're not going to trade buckets with those guys. Your perimeter players aren't going to match them point for point. It's just not a thing that's going to happen.
I think David West, and now we're so far afield in like 2 sentences, I think David West may be sneaky washed up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even know that it's sneaky anymore.
Oh, I didn't realize it was like a lukewarm take. I thought that was still...
Was that hot? It might be. I don't know. Yeah. I agree with you completely. I mean, what purpose now? We've kind of phased out guys like David West, the guys who can't really move. Like, how much better is David West than Brandon Bass? Right? They do the exact same things in theory, don't they?
Absolutely, and Brandon Bass is probably a slightly more consistent mid-range jump shooter at this point in his career.
And a little bit more athletic than David West at this point in his career, too.
I hope Brandon Bass hears this podcast. It's the first time in a long time that someone has called Brandon Bass more athletic than another NBA player.
It's like a backhanded compliment, though. We're good at those. I feel like I dish out backhanded NBA compliments all the time.
They're the best kind. You don't want these guys to get a big head, you know?
No.
Podcasters like us are here to keep them in their place.
Got
to
keep them humble. I want to ask you about Paul Pierce, because Ralph Lawler at halftime tweeted a picture of Paul Pierce as a pirate, and there was another picture that kind of went viral, if that's still a thing that the kids say, of Paul Pierce dressed as Rick James on the bench. So I'm very confused. Do you have any insight? You were there. You saw him in person. Was he Rick James or was he a pirate?
He was briefly Rick James that I saw. I didn't see the pirate costume that might have been before the game started. To add to the confusion, in-game during commercial breaks, at the Staples Center, they were running a feature where it was like little interviews with all the Clippers about their favorite Halloween costumes. And both of Paul Pierce's, he said, well, my best two costumes either has to be Jigsaw from the movie Saw, the horror movie.
Sure.
Or... Scream guy from the movie Scream. Both of those movies came out when Paul Pierce was like 20. obviously, it was just cracking me up thinking, like, he not start dressing up until he was 20. Were those really the best costumes he came up with? Or, he never stopped trick-or-treating? I don't know. I have questions.
I tweeted a great picture of him. I retweeted it. I don't know how to put four pictures together in, like, one thing.
Yeah, you have to be under 30 to have that skill.
That sounds, it's really hard, but it's all of Paul Pierce's costumes. So there was the one tonight as Rick James. He had one as Buzz Lightyear. One year he dressed as Captain America, and another year he dressed as what appears to be a frog king of some sort. So his favorite costumes, he's had some good ones recently. The Buzz Lightyear one was especially janky. I don't know why that's the best one, why he thinks that's the best one. Also, do you think Diamond Stone is just like, what are those costumes?
He's never heard of any of those.
Yeah, he's like, Scream, what's that?
I gotta think Toy Story was around when Diamond Stone was a kid, right? Like, don't the kids still watch Pixar movies?
Was it? Yeah, I guess it was, right? Well, maybe.
I don't know.
Man.
I was tutoring SATs a couple years ago, and a kid had never heard of Aladdin or Lion King, which was, like, mind-blowing.
Wow. Never heard of Lion King? How is that even possible?
I don't know. They're 15. They have, like, a collective memory of 2 months.
I coach high school basketball, so I think tomorrow for practice I'm just going to sit down and ask them if they know all the old people thing that I know.
Yeah, I love that. You know, by the way, it was an ugly game when we're, like, 10 minutes in, we're in Halloween costumes. And your JV basketball squad.
Sure. We're going to talk about our JV basketball squad a lot on this podcast. Just so people know, just a heads up, it's going to be Clippers and Mission Vista Timberwolves highlights.
By the way, that was just me sounding like a jerk for no reason. I assume they're not the JV team. I assume you coach... Is it the JV squad?
No, yes. I am the head coach of the JV, and I assist with varsity and the freshman team.
And how's the team looking this year?
You know, we're shaping up pretty well. Some of the guys listen to the podcast, so that we look great. We're going to win every game this year.
Fantastic. I love that.
All right, let's get back to the Clippers. Let's wrap this thing up. Again, it's a sloppy, sloppy game. If you missed it, you missed a whole lot of nothing. Like I said before, the Suns kind of tried to speed up the Clippers, and it worked for a little bit in the first half. But eventually all their terrible mistakes kind of caught up with them. Chris Paul brought some sense of order to the court, and the Clippers came away with the victory. I asked a question on Twitter. I asked, which former Clipper scared you the most whenever he got the ball? So which former Clipper, Jordan, scared you the most whenever he got the basketball?
For me, it was Kenyon Martin. And yeah. Generally speaking, I loved the Kenyon Martin Clipper experience. I mean, it really did give that team, along with Reggie Evans, like a real kind of old man, mid-90s Knicks grit to them that served them really well in that first series against the Grizzlies. That being said, Kenyon Martin was one of those players who, like, never really adjusted to being old and not good at basketball anymore. And, like, he was liable to take that line drive 14-footer whenever he had an opportunity. He was like Mo Buckets on the trigger, only they never went in. So, for me, anytime he got the ball and there was a little space in front of him, I just already started screaming at the TV, don't shoot.
That's a great one. The don't shoot guys are always the best. And Kenny, line drive is almost being kind to the arc on Kenyon Martin's shot. It was more like an assault on the rim every time he shot the ball.
Yeah, that was really a one-of-a-kind shot in those years. Although, Brian Cook, by the way, for a guy who made his living as a three-point shooter,
yeah,
also kind of a Clipper line driver of yesteryear.
You know, when I asked this question, I kind of had Cookie in the back of my mind because it was... But you know what? It didn't scare me most. I was mostly just sad for him every time he got it. Because you have one job, and to watch someone fail at the one thing that they're supposed to do, it was more like, it gave me anxiety more than it scared me. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. The guy who was like that for me was poor Byron Mullins.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I couldn't even summon up, you know, like, fan vitriol for this guy. It's like, you've been brought in here to do a job that you are not capable of doing, and that's not fair to anyone involved.
So I'm going to read some Twitter answers here. My favorite one was from @scratch21. He says, every answer should be Chris Kamen.
look, that's fair, and anything that reminds me of the Kamen years always makes me happy, but like, there were a couple years there where Kamen was downright good. He was an all-star one year. He was, you know, I don't know. I always kind of liked it when Kamen had the ball.
Early Chris Kamen, the thing with Chris Kamen, and I think where the fear came from, is that anytime he tried to make a pass, it was a disaster. If a double team came for him, it was like the ball is going in the third row. Like, he had maybe the worst court vision of any big guy in Clippers history. And he missed little two-foot shots with regularity.
All true. That being said, that, like, young Kamen / all-star Elton Brand front court, that was kind of a fun year in Clipper basketball.
No, I love Kamen. I loved what he did for the Clippers. From, like, 18 feet, late career Chris Kamen, oh my goodness. He was automatic.
Yeah, absolutely. Is he still, like, the eighth big on the Trailblazer bench, or is he out of basketball?
No, I think he's out of basketball, finally. He had a reality show going on for a little bit, but I think...
It was, like, deer hunting themed, right?
Yeah. I think he's out now. Speaking of reality show, this is, like, kind of an aside before we get to the rest of them. Travis Kelce, who's a tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs, has a reality show where he, like, dates a new girl every episode. And I don't watch it, but I saw a quick clip on Twitter where he's playing basketball with his date. And, dude, pump fake, one dribble, elevate, just dunked hard on her.
That's awesome.
Like, that's must-see TV, just somebody just dunking all over their first date. I love it. I love it. I wish I could dunk. I would go on way more first dates, or would have gone on way more first dates, I should say now.
Just that detail would be enough to get me to watch the show if I literally knew anybody in the NFL anymore.
Right. You're not missing much. Basically, every NFL game this year has been this Clippers-Sun game, just on loop.
So here, obviously, like, there's some real schadenfreude there for me. I have, like, a deep dislike of football. It's more than just ambivalence. Sport I really hate.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I, you, if I didn't write about fantasy football and that wasn't, you know, like a big part of my life, yeah, I'd be perfectly fine never watching another football game again.
Anyway, let's keep going to basketball topics. There's no way people tune in to hear me rail against the NFL.
No, give me like, dude, give me your 30-second rail against the NFL. I'm curious. What are the big issues?
Boy, it's everything from what I find is a poorly designed sport itself, a sport that has to kind of change its rules every 2 years in order to accommodate that poor design, to the kind of corporate structure that seems both petty and no fun and regressive and deeply antithetical to players' health. And then mostly what I really hate about it is I understand just enough to understand that football is this like deeply complex game, and yet the way that it's filmed and narrated simplifies it down to a game of toss and catch between quarterbacks and wide receivers. And there's something about that tension between how complex the game really is, how oversimplified it's made for American consumption, that just feels to me like some crazy metaphor for American culture in general and just engenders nothing but hate in me.
Do you feel better?
I do feel better.
Like a little bit, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, good. Let's move on with the final answers here. Lawler's Law says Quinn Ross with exclamation points.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Q, that's a pretty good one. Yeah, you never wanted Q to really get the ball outside. You know what's my favorite fact about Quinton Ross is that he averaged like 35 points a game in college. So like,
he's amazing. Where did he go to college?
It was some small school, but point being, even guys that look like they can't do anything in the NBA, like scoring wise or offensively. Chances are, along the line, high school, college, AAU, they were putting up 40, 50 points a game pretty regularly.
Oh, yeah. I never get over what just freakish athletes all these guys are. It's like when you're watching a baseball game, and it's the pitcher, and he's hitting .110 for his career, and you'll always find out, look, he played center field and hit .500 on the days he wasn't pitching in high school and college. You know, these guys are such freaks.
They're freaks. And then we had another vote for Chris Kamen. Kamen when he dribbled instead of just putting the ball up. Yes, Chris Kamen dribbling was a hell of an experience. Nick Flint also chimes in with Zach Randolph, and at Stan the Kid agrees. He says Zach Randolph at the 3-point line scared him the most. Zeebo, do you miss the Zeebo era?
You know that I'm like one of the only Clipper fans who has kind of a more than a grudging respect. Like, I downright kind of enjoy watching the Grizzlies, and I think a big reason is that even when Zeebo was with the Clippers, like, if you watched him every game, you knew that he was a winning basketball player if he was just given the right surroundings. Like, he was as automatic a 20-10 guy in whatever year that was, 2005, 2006, as there was in the league. Like, I always loved Zeebo. Soft hands, great rebounder, you know, just a little bit almost like a poor man's DeMarcus Cousins. I think a lot of his reputation for surliness and bad attitudes came from what terrible situations he was in and what terrible teammates he was saddled with and bad coaches and losing teams. Like, it's not easy to play on a team like that as the best player and then be asked to play within a system and sacrifice and not heave up threes or whatever.
Yeah, Jailblazers and then the Knicks and then some awful Clippers teams. It was only a matter of time before he landed somewhere that, with a somewhat winning culture, would turn him around. Oh, but man,
exactly.
he was real bad with the Clippers after a while there. He started off good, and then it just started to slowly go downhill. I think my vote is for, I'm going to go with Ricky Davis.
Oh, that's a good one.
That was
always, like, absolutely terrifying. I think they even called him Trick or Treat Ricky Davis for a while, right?
That sounds vaguely familiar and really ties in nicely with the whole Halloween theme.
I try. I feel like that was, like, a Simmons nickname for him. A Simmons sobriquet, if you will.
Yeah, well, I think my favorite nickname of any Clipper, and could honestly be on this list, too, but he was a little too productive. Bad Porn, Corey Maggette.
Oh, well, look, Maggette was just, he did one thing incredibly well. If he was trying to do anything but that, you know, his rim runs were amazing.
Amazing.
He was kind of a proto Harden in that sense, except he couldn't then step back and hit the three. So when they blocked off the lane and he had to try to do anything else, absolutely, he's a top fiver on that list.
So I think you're sticking with your answer. You're feeling good about it.
I feel good about it. Although I'm glad this conversation allowed me to revisit the Byron Mullins era. Actually, you know who else should be on this list?
Who?
Poor Mind Fritz Spencer Hawes.
Oh.
During those first 3 months where it genuinely looked like he'd never played basketball before. Just had no idea what was happening.
Yeah, the whole stretch big man thing hasn't really worked out too well for the Clippers in the past, has it?
No, although it has less to do with the concept of the stretch big man than with the stretch big man the Clippers brought in.
Maurice Spates is the real savior we've been waiting for.
He's the real deal.
No charges for Mo Spates tonight. He tried to take one, which I appreciate.
No charges, but again, even on a night where Mo was a little off and Austin obviously wasn't hitting anything other than those layups, you see the spacing he brings to the floor because you do have to respect him at the top of the key, and it gives that whole second unit a lot of room to operate.
Yep, I loved all the comments that Don McLean was making in the third quarter. Enjoyed the Clippers' three-man booth on the broadcast team tonight. I know you were live at the game, but the third quarter, some real interesting conversation about some of the Suns' young guys that McLean's worked with, and I don't know, very enjoyable. So good job, Clippers broadcast. You ready to wrap this thing up, Jordan?
I'm ready to wrap it up. Since you did mention the Suns' young guys, I will just say Tyler Ulis was, to me, maybe the highlight of the game, in terms of a random thing that was just fun to watch.
Yeah.
I was sitting next to Andrew Hahn, and his line on him was, if there was ever going to be a 5'8 guy with average athleticism that somehow makes it in the NBA, it's going to be this dude. And it's really true. For a guy who is not a Muggsy Bogues type explosive leaper, boy, does he make the most out of what he's got.
Earl Boykins-ish.
Earl Boykins-ish, absolutely.
Clippers throwback.
A little Earl Watson-ish.
Oh, well, he's in the right hands then.
There you go.
All right, once again, Clippers win 116-98. The Clippers will be back in action on Wednesday against Oklahoma City, but we will be back with you tomorrow for a podcast. We'll get caught up on all the news. We'll check in on DeAndre Jordan's thumb. We'll do some little housekeeping. We'll have a podcast going for tomorrow, solo show, and then we'll be back Wednesday to cover the game against the Thunder. Remember, if you have questions for the show, comments, you can email me at fosterdj3@gmail.com or find me on Twitter at FoxSportsFoster. Once again, thanks for listening to the Locked On Clippers podcast. Enjoy your day.
Takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.